Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kelly Wells, and I am the host of PWT Talks NXT. And tonight we're going to talk NXT for March 29th, 2022. Were you ever wondering, do I get really excited and like throw my arms out at the beginning of this show when I say, well, aloha? I do it every week. And every week I'm like, why am I doing this? This is not a visual medium. I can't explain it, folks. Okay, so I know you don't always make it to the end of the show. We're front loaded. We talk main event early. Stick around to the end. Something deserves your ears. Let's say hello to the usual gang of idiots. This is Tom Staupe.
Yes, hello, Tom Staupe, at Tom Staupe on Twitter. And the new episode of Bonus Point is up on PW Torch VIP if you haven't listened to it yet. It is not a timely matter. You can listen to it at any point during the month, and I hope you are getting something out of it.
Nathan Lindberg, who are you?
What's going on, guys? At Nate Lindberg on Twitter, I write the NXT hits and misses, which I really was hoping to have up by now, but for some reason, the PW Torch website on WordPress has given me some crap, so it won't actually let me publish it. So as soon as I can, I'll get it up for you guys. But until then, why don't we talk to NXT?
All right.
Yeah, we're working blue tonight, folks. I think Nate's the only one who hasn't caught it yet.
Face is turning about seven shades of red right now.
Matt, we were doing this before we went on the air.
We were.
Well, we haven't lost any listeners yet.
We gained a few.
That word of mouth spreads quick. 41 and a half minutes of wrestling on this show, many of them on commercial, as usual. This go-home show for Stand and Deliver, which I dare say was a good one. By the way, Stand and Deliver, a real dopey start time, 1 a.m. for those two guys and noon for me. That's no good. Saturday, I am not available at all until about 7 p.m. So I guess I'll be the last to Stand and Deliver. Let's talk main event tonight. This was the only match tonight with genuine stakes. We had seven matches, bangers one and all. But let's start with this. This one with stakes. Cameron Grimes versus A-Kid versus Roderick Strong. This was for the final spot. This was your last chance to get into that ladder match on Saturday for the North American Championship held by Carmelo Hayes. And in case this is your first week watching wrestling, you already knew that Cameron Grimes was going to win this. And in fact, I said in these exact words, he will win a multi-man last chance match to get into this match. I said that the second he lost the first qualifier.
It before you. That's one of the first times I said something before you. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Before me, I typed it in my recap, Nate.
Aw, fine.
You couldn't possibly. This guy trying to steal my clout, I tells you.
I get it so infrequently. I had to try somewhere.
I should have let you have it in retrospect. But Grimes does, of course, go ahead in a match that was not just a spot fest, but had some spots I've just genuinely never seen. Innovative ways to transition one move into another. My big gripe here is that this was an 11-minute match. Four of it was minimized on split screen, so we didn't get a whole lot of flow here. I was just getting back into it in the 3 minutes that it came back on TV, and it ended. And then we had a show-ending brawl ahead of the North American Championship match. It's not that it made me forget the championship match, but the fact that neither of the combatants in the championship match were there, but everybody who's in the North American Championship match was there at the end of the show did kind of bury that one match and made me think that maybe this is the one to look forward to. But I'm genuinely looking forward to the card. even the matches that I'm not expecting to deliver, let alone stand. I think that they have built these. I think this build has been pretty strong. So, okay, main event. Grimes goes over the field and joins the ladder match. Tom.
Yeah, Fast and Furious, quality stuff, despite the foregone conclusion that did go quite a way to take me out of it, and I do agree with your criticisms of the presentation. I'll just add that, you know, it wasn't a hard out for the TV show, because afterward everybody stood around and everybody got to say their catchphrases. So could have done without that, could have just been a staring contest, but everybody got to catchphrase. I'll say that what's not working for me here is that Cameron Grimes' character, which had become honestly one of the best characters on the entire show, has now had every single thing stripped away from it in favor of him having a dead father. That's his entire character going into this premium live event. And like they did the same thing, I believe, with Dante Chen. They did the same thing with Zachary Wentz. Like that was the entire characterization of MSK was that one of them has a dead father. And Cameron Grimes' father passed away 4 years ago. So I'm supposed to believe that all of a sudden this is his main motivation, is his bygone father. Even though we had already, so much effort had been put into getting us to care about Cameron Grimes in other ways. So that's my biggest complaint going into this. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you just take the action of the main event in a bubble unto itself, it was good. And yes, very creative.
Grimes has done well with the material, but his situation is literally universal. Like everybody's father dies at some point. I guess they don't always die before you, but I feel much the same that that he's not, like, his character is not really part of this anymore. People were really, really high on his backstage segment, if everybody that I follow on Twitter is to be believed today. And it was good. Like, he's doing well with the content, but I don't know. All right, Nate, what do you think?
I couldn't agree with you guys more in terms of, you know, Cameron Grimes and his character right now. I mean, you know, one of the things we were talking about before we went on the air, we were talking with Bruce in our group chat on Twitter there, you know, is Cameron Grimes, has, like, he's almost dropped his accent. I mean, the accent's still there to a point, but it's not, at least in that promo tonight, was like, it was just really stripped back. He just seemed very normal. And I know he was trying to sound, you know, somber and things like that, but that's not the Cameron Grimes character. You know, you kind of don't just drop the accent. But yeah, I mean, they went through so many lengths with, you know, the Million Dollar Man and Million Dollar Championship and his feud with LA Knight and everything that that character's gone through. And now, yeah, they're just kind of playing to the, you know, I've got a dead father, which, you know, we've seen quite a few times over the past, Tom brought it up. We've seen it quite a bit over the past, you know, year or so. So it's, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of it. I agree. Cameron Grimes is certainly making the best of it. I mean, he delivered that promo very well tonight, but it again, just the content of the promo and the story, you know, kind of surrounding him and his character right now, I'm not really surprised. I'm not really pleased with, rather. It's not my favorite iteration of Cameron Grimes. As far as the match itself went, it was a bit of a shame. The majority of it was on, the split screen, but again, I was really impressed with A Kid in this match. He's got a lot. He's got a lot in the ring that he can pull out. A couple of the moves that he did, like he was a sunset flipped over somebody. I think it was over Cameron Grimes, and then Roderick Strong caught him and, you know, into a power bomb. And just he's very versatile, very unique, and I really like what I've seen past few weeks out of him. He's not very, you know, not much fanfare in terms of him coming in. You know, they showed, you know, a few things of him in the UK, and they gave him a little bit, but he didn't have a whole lot of fanfare coming in, you know, a few weeks ago, and even now, still isn't. They're not really paying as much attention to him as I think they maybe should. But you know, maybe that's just me kind of marking out at this guy right off the bat. But I really like what I see here. Roderick Strong was kind of like, I felt like he was the odd man out in this match. You know, certainly, you know, a bit of a rock here, but and I don't mean the rock, I meant a rock, a bit of a rock here, but it wasn't, I don't know. I felt like out of everybody in this match, Roderick Strong had the least amount. He was the least likely to win. I was giving a kid a very small chance to win, but this was Cameron Grimes' match. This was his match to win all along, especially with the amount of you know, TV time and amount of story they're kind of putting into everything surrounding, you know, his new motivation and all that. I am really looking forward to this match at Stand and Deliver, though. You know, Solo Sikoa, Grayson Waller, Santos Escobar, Cameron Grimes, and Carmelo Hayes. On paper, this sounds like it should be an amazing match, and I think it has potential to be, you know, potentially the match of the night.
All right, that phone number is 515-605-9345, or you can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We are going to go to Ryan in Cumberland and talk to him. So, Ryan, on this go-home show, what did you think?
It was a fine show. My first question is, watching the show, are there any hints on who might have their final show tonight and be going to the main roster after WrestleMania next week?
Well, with Tommaso Ciampa, you can't really call it a hint. They just came out and said it outright, more or less, with the chair written on the chair as if an epitaph, his start and death date, birth and death date in NXT. As for others, I don't know if there was anything overt. I feel like seeing Raquel and Dakota together again when they've already kind of run their course, but they had a pretty good run together and a pretty good dynamic going, could suggest something moving quickly for them. There's no hints necessarily that that's going to be Braun's move. Very intrigued in that because I genuinely don't know if they run with Braun or if they just keep him away from the championship so he can be fast-tracked. And it would be very, very fast. But I don't know. The pieces are all in place. The Steiners are getting inducted. The whole swirl, the whole thing about the family is there. So it's possible. As for anyone else, I'll leave these guys to speculate. Nate, what did you think?
So obviously Ciampa, he's going up. Very bittersweet for me. I really did like that moment where he spun the chair around and had the dates, you know, start and end date of, you know, at NXT there. I thought that was a really cool touch, but man, it is bittersweet for me because he's my guy. I don't want to see him go up, but is what it is there, I guess. As far as anybody else, nobody else really stood out and there wasn't like, there wasn't any sort of hint for anybody else. You know, Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai, the thought also crossed my mind, but I'm also too, who is in the women's tag division right now to actually be a credible threat for the women's tag team champions, Toxic Attraction. So I feel like if you're going to have, you're going to team, you know, Gonzalez and Kai back up, I'm almost thinking they may wind up winning the tag titles. I got to digest it a bit more, but maybe they end up winning the tag titles away from Toxic Attraction, kind of move storylines along that way. But I don't know if that necessarily signifies an advancement up to the main roster or anything like that. Another one that kind of crossed my mind is LA Knight. I mean, he's doing some stuff with Gunther and Imperium right now. That could certainly, I mean, it's going to end at Stand and Deliver. Presumably anyway, I guess, not definitively, presumably going to end at Stand and Deliver. So he could potentially be somebody they call up. He's certainly somebody that I think would flourish on the main roster in his current incarnation. If they were able, you know, if they kind of kept him as is and, you know, didn't turn him into Butch 2 or something. Although it's not the worst thing in the world, but I digress. As far as Bron Breakker goes, I'm really torn. I wouldn't be surprised if they called him up, but at the same time, I kind of would because it was a very short stint in NXT. I feel like he probably benefit for a little bit more time. You know, I've said it in the past, I think he benefits from more time down here in NXT before moving on to the main roster. However, if they did bring him up, I think he's got the ability where it stands right now that he wouldn't completely flounder. I think, you know, he might seem a little out of place at first, as he kind of did, at least to me anyway, when he was on Raw and had that match a handful of weeks ago there. But, you know, I think he'd actually be able to survive on the main roster as of right now. I think if he spent a little more time down here, he may be able to survive even more, you know, and have more of a chance of becoming a major star on the main roster. That's at least my 2 cents.
Tom, what are your 2 cents?
I actually came prepared with a list full of cents. We got a couple emails about this, so I was thinking about it. The emails will still be worth reading. I'm sure there are different wrinkles that we might be able to pick apart. But apart from Ciampa, which we have sussed out, I mean, that saying that we sussed it out is giving us too much credit. You know what I mean. And apart from Bron Breakker and Cameron Grimes, who have been on my list, but I'm not so sure about them anymore. Bron Breakker now, because even though I have suggested over and over again that he should lose here, well, I'm sort of at odds with myself because I do think he should stay in NXT until SummerSlam, but I also think that Dolph Ziggler should remain champion and build up other people around him in the championship scene. After Breakker had that video tonight, which was good just because he wasn't yelling, he ended it, I think he ended it, by saying that he was standing up for everyone who chants NXT. And I'm like, oh, okay, they're not going to have that guy lose after he said that. This is an NXT branding thing. Not because of the chant NXT, but talking about the people and people who have dedicated themselves to the brand, even through the reversion, maybe people who think that, oh, well, Bron Breakker is standing up for me even though I stopped watching. I don't know. I think that's – I now think that Breakker probably will retain. And I guess I probably thought that before as well, even though I kept on saying and do still feel that the right move would be to keep it on Ziggler. So apart from them, I think that Legado del Fantasma, the male members only, are an option, or just Santos by himself. I think that Dexter Lumis is an option, and that would be how we get out of the index thing. We've been wondering, like, how do they end up moving on from that? Because they always end up moving on from these things, unless it's Triple H and Stephanie, and they even tried to move away from that once or twice. So that could be how they move away from it. And, yeah, you could have Indy sort of, like, playing at her wedding ring on NXT, and then they just don't address it at all on the main roster. But the... what did they call it? Whatever the index versus Duja thing at Stand and Deliver is going to be, I got the impression that they're going to do it at the show. I don't know about like in front of the audience, but maybe that will be the blow off to all of this. Just an option. Nate said LA Knight. I think that's an obvious one. Roderick Strong, maybe. I don't feel good about it, but his name, I don't know. It seems like a possibility. I could totally see him just sort of like showing up cold, and Michael Cole has a couple lines about him, and then he doesn't really end up doing anything. Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray lumped together, and it really depends on lumped together in this particular consideration. It really depends on how much they are being relied on to help the greener talents in the women's division get by on television. I think Io has been leaned on heavily for that. Not so much Kaylee. No discredit to her. It's just that they've been leaning on Io more for that. And then Raquel is a maybe, just because it seems like she's run her course on the brand, and she hasn't shown any further improvements over about the past year. So it's like, well, if they're going to call her up, why not now? So those are all my options.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Raquel. Like, she's in this really weird position where I feel like calling her up is as likely as firing her, because she has not gotten just any better. She's not getting worse, but she's just where she is. I believe she's been at her peak for kind of a while. Ryan, we go to you again.
My second question is on Stand and Deliver. Minutes are still selling tickets for that event. What's your prediction for attendance for this show, as I believe it holds over 20,000 people? Do you think they'll be able to do that, or do you think it's going to be a pretty empty arena?
I wouldn't bet on an empty arena, on a pretty empty arena, just because WWE will see to it that that does not happen. But I think they could struggle. They struggled in a big way with viewership after the rebranding. I still don't know what to call it. After the fresh coat of paint, folks, they struggled with viewership and have kind of rebounded. But 20,000 going out into a state where they don't necessarily have the built-in fan base, it's a lot. And they've done what they can with a little bit of stunt casting, but maybe they need more. And this is also, they've got all the people that will be there for WrestleMania weekend anyway. I don't know. I guess I don't think about things like attendance all that much until the show happens and I go, oh, there aren't that many damn people there. But Tom, what do you think?
Without double-checking myself, I did look this up, you know, weeks ago, and I believe American Airlines, I think it's called. I believe it does hold 20,000, like Ryan said, and I believe that WWE only opened up 10,000 of those, with the, of course, as always, the option to open up more if the ticket sales are good. But I am anticipating that they will fill the 10,000 and will, you know, if they announce the attendance number, well, they probably won't on the air. But I, you know, once we look at the attendance number, I'm expecting, like, I don't know, 10,216.
That was so much more specific than I was willing to get. And now I feel sad that I didn't go a little harder. 10,216. All right. I will counter with 10,217.
I was gonna say you've got to go one over. That's the move.
I didn't know whether to go over or under. I'll take the over with that aggressive move.
$1, Bob. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think we had enough days home from school that sick home from school that we watched The Price is Right enough to know.
Yeah. Nate, 10,200, and how many?
I'll go with 316. Because Austin's going to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
There we go. I kind of share the same sentiments you guys have. I don't really think a whole lot of attendance myself. However, I have been a little bit kind of coming into WrestleMania because I've seen the ads now for WrestleMania tickets. I've seen the ads now for Stand Deliver tickets. I mean, WrestleMania historically gets sold out, like, you know, super quick. It hasn't the past couple of years. I think obviously things going on in the world probably play a little bit into that. But regardless, Stand Deliver, I think about 10,000 probably sounds about right. But you know, one does wonder if they are struggling to sell tickets right now. It's really going to be interesting to see how all three of these shows, especially considering they're just back to back shows. It's going to be interesting to see how full the arena is going to be, or stadium's going to be, you know, and how much they're how much actually is going to be blocked off, and how much it actually differs from show to show to show. You know, I'm assuming Stand Deliver's probably going to have a smaller crowd than night one and night two of WrestleMania, but I've been wrong in the past. But I do. I kind of think WrestleMania is probably both nights are going to have a bit of a bigger crowd. If this was still black and gold and we were talking about a takeover, maybe a different story. But I think with the rebrand and all of that, just kind of the shine's been taken off NXT, at least for the, you know, mainstream audience, you know, that they weren't necessarily the ones watching NXT in the first place. But, you know, I think you guys know what I'm saying. But I'm expecting to see Stand and Deliver have a smaller in-person audience, and then WrestleMania night one and night two to certainly outshine it.
Ryan, go ahead.
I don't know if you know much about this topic, but I noticed there was a large man eyeing a Perlin in the crowd. Do you know anything if he's going to be a foe to Gacy, or is he going to be one of the new members, or something else going on? Maybe he's just a fan. I was a little excited, but he definitely looked like a wrestler due to his size and appearance to me.
You are correct, sir. That is PC wrestler Quincy Elliott. And Tom reminded me, I would not have remembered, that he was one of the guys who got it handed to him in the Joe Gacy Invitational. So he was used in that spot and is being used in this spot now too. And I will go ahead and throw to Tom, because Tom knows more about Quincy Elliott than either of Nate or I do, and might be able to shed some light.
Yes, he's out of California, the formerly known as MIG, and I may know those things about him, but I don't know enough to know that it is indeed pronounced MIG. It might be MIG, but I'm pretty sure it's MIG. And he was listed, like when you Google him, one of the main things that comes up is that he was listed as number 182 2021 list of the best LGBTQ wrestlers. And he also recently, well, very recently, less than a week ago, wrestled on NXT. Okay, well, they air it on delay, so a little over a week ago now, he wrestled on NXT Level Up against Joe Gacy, and I really liked the match. He was playing the babyface. I don't know what they're going to have him doing on 2.0, but he was playing babyface against Gacy, and he sold me to the point in the short time that he had for his match that I genuinely wanted to see him win. Definitely some credit to Gacy being so unlikable that that I just wanted to see him get beat, but I felt like I was more wanting to see Quincy get the pin than I was invested in seeing Gacy's shoulders pinned to the mat. So I'm very interested in seeing where they go with this guy.
Nate, did anything stand out to you?
Not really. Tom, what did you say he ranked 182 the most an LGBT wrestler?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, not exactly top five.
No, not exactly. My real big takeaway from that is that there's at least 182 LGBT wrestlers out there, and that pleasantly surprises me. I'm sure there's probably more than that, because I'm sure that list didn't end at 182. So that's really my big takeaway from here. Everything you guys said, I was already thinking or wondering myself. So we can certainly move on.
We will learn more about Quincy Elliott together. Ryan, if you got one more, go ahead.
Final question is on Jacket Time. They said they're the Japanese announced team. Is that just like a storyline? Like, are we like missing something? Like when NXT is like Shin, like overseas, like are these announcers like pretty famous like Jacket Time, or are they just like someone we wouldn't even know who they were?
In Japan, Kushida is extremely famous. He's very well known there. He was the ace of the junior heavyweight, which is what they'd call cruiserweight division. He was the guy in that division for the last 4 or 5 years. He was in New Japan. I have seen still to this day, literally hundreds more matches he worked in New Japan than I have in NXT. And I've seen all the ones he worked in NXT that were on TV. So he is a large amount of fame there. That said, this is just a little storyline there. I am sure they are not getting any kind of feed from these guys announcing, or if they are, I don't know where that feed's going. I guess it's possible that they're getting this feed. I do not know how well-known Ikem and Jiro is there. He might have wrestled for one of the other promotions, but as much as I pay attention to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I never miss a show, I miss nothing that they do on the other Puro Resu organizations. So I assume nobody is actually getting this audio, probably, unless there's just some gimmick that's going back home. But yes, Kushida is massively known there. And when he goes back to New Japan, no matter how he was used or misused in this company, he is going to go right to the top again. And he is going to go home to a hero's welcome because they adore him there.
As he should, because, you know, I feel he's been criminally underused in NXT, but we've talked a lot about that in the past. As far as like the feed, I would assume that it was probably a staged thing for tonight. Perhaps the feed did go to, you know, the Japanese audience. I wouldn't be surprised to hear that. I don't know the names of the, you know, the Japanese announced team for NXT. I'm assuming it might potentially be the same people that, you know, are the announced team for Raw and SmackDown. I know Funaki was one of them for a long time. I don't know if he still is, but that would be interesting to actually listen to Funaki commentate NXT. Anyway, yeah, that's really all I have to say on that. I'm looking up, you know, looking at Wikipedia for Ikem and Jiro right now. He did wrestle for Wrestle 1 from 2014 to his signing in WWE in 2020. But, it, you know, I'm just kind of quickly skimming through all of this. It's a very short section. So even though it spans over 6 years, the short sections, I don't think he nearly made the waves that Kushida did in Japan.
Yeah, I know that I read up on Ikem and Jiro at one point and was very, very tickled to see that Eichmann just meant like handsome dude. Like he's an Eichmann. Like he calls himself just handsome dude Jiro. It's something, it's, I don't know if that exactly translates, but like idol boy or something
that's,
like that.
That's what I remember reading that as well. It was handsome dude or handsome man or something like that.
Yep. Tom?
Yeah, not too much further. I mean, they obviously do some cross training and even in other promotions, like I don't know how prolific he has been in this role, but I know Serpentico has helped with Spanish language commentary on AEW. So there are always the options there, but this was clearly just for the one segment to get them involved in the one little angle here, which is the same thing that they did the last time that Jacket Time was, quote, Japanese language commentary, which I don't remember what angle that was, but that was definitely around the start of this tag team when we were all the more aghast because it was new at how they were having them behave.
We thank you as always, Ryan. And now we are going to go over to Baltimore and talk to our friend, Reverend Keith. Keith, if you can hear us, and if this thing will actually unmute, looks like it finally did now. Go ahead.
How you guys doing tonight?
I'm not too bad. Good spirits. It was a good show, so I'm happy.
Yes, I thought it was a good go-home show. I second all of your comments on Cameron Grimes, and it does seem storyline-wise that they're headed for his coronation on Saturday. It's kind of obvious with the fact that they've been mentioning so much about his father, you know. So we'll see where that goes. I thought the main event tonight was pretty good, and I really like A-Kid. I watched him shine on NXT UK, so I'm glad that he's over in the United States so that more people can get a look at this guy, because I think he's about a year away from really becoming a huge star, not only in NXT, but also perhaps one day on the main. You know, what are your thoughts on A-Kid's progression in NXT?
You know, A-Kid is one of those guys who might not need a lot of seasoning there because he's essentially been doing it in NXT UK for quite a while. It's just going to be – my big question is how does the main roster use him in a way that doesn't make him seem like just another smaller guy who can move? Because he can move to a superlative degree, but he's also a very, very good technical wrestler, as the Brits tend to churn out. So they can lean on that too. And how do they present the guy? Because it's funny that he didn't have a wrestling name, so he told them to announce him as a kid on a wrestling show. It's funny that that was the impetus for that. But how long is that funny, and how long does that take on the main roster to just become like kind of an eye roll? Okay, what do we have now? What do we have in A-Kid? So to me, this is almost just like a stall to figure out how to present the guy in a more colorful way, because we know that he can go. And they're already working on that with his gear and things like that. It's much more elaborate already. He did some I love the British rounds matches. I'm not going to bore everybody with how the British rounds matches work, but I really, really liked that tournament, the Heritage Cup, and I really like the matches I've seen that are the defenses of that Heritage Cup. But putting him in this setting where it's sink or swim now, they didn't bring him over for nothing. They've obviously got big plans for him. I hadn't given much thought to A-Kid. But maybe I should have. Maybe I should have. And to be honest, I didn't give him a lot of thought as a possible winner of the Heritage Cup until it happened. So he's very good. And I think he's got a high ceiling if they find something for him to do. But if he just goes up as a kid who can move and has flashy colored clothes, he's going to have an uphill battle.
Oh, what the hell is A-Kid, pal? Absolutely strikes me as Butch, Gunter, a situation where they're going to look at the talent and be like, well, okay, great, but we've got to give them something to give them hope of translating on the main roster. So I think that we're looking at a rename with exactly all the other stuff that you said, except for the high ceiling, because I just don't see no insult to him. I just don't see it in this environment. All the other stuff you said about, you know, just being a wrestler who can move and just occupying what was the post NXT pre-205 Live Adrian Neville role. And I know everybody called it the Mighty Mouse thing because that was what was reported, even though they never said that on TV, but they gave Adrian Neville a cape because they didn't know what else to do with him. And it was not flattering for him or for creative having come up with it or however that came to be. But I will say, though, that, you know, Nate said that A-Kid stood out to him more during this main event. And I agree. Most of the focus was on, I mean, Roderick Strong just wrestling the life out of himself in that main event. But, you know, for A-Kid's part of it, I was more impressed with him than I have been from the limited stuff I've seen from him thus far.
Capes, man. You can't look cool in a cape. I did high school speech, and you'd go against other schools that were more, they were less serious about, you know, doing well in it. And they were more like, let's be weird and do theater and stuff. And they wore capes, and you just want to go up to them and be like, hey, you're not the first person to look cool in a cape. And now I just say, I want to see you get syndromed from the Incredible.
Yes. Yes, exactly. There's I love the Corridor Crew on YouTube, and they have a stuntman series where they talk to stuntmen and women about stunts and how they're done and everything. And they're evaluating a Batman fight scene from one of the Zack Snyder Batman movies, and one of the henchmen grabs Batman's cape and yanks Batman down, and the stuntman is just like, yes, thank you. That is what you would do. It's so stupid to wear a cape.
There you are. Yeah, it's, you know, and if you're wearing a cape, you look dumb in the cape. There are no exceptions. And that exception you're trying to think of in pop culture is not.
I don't know. The Duke from Moulin Rouge, man.
No.
I mean, I think Batman would look a lot less cool without a cape.
You would look more cool. I got nothing right now. Nate?
Yeah, there's not much that can do that. So, you know. I'm really high on A-Kid. I forget the question, what the question was at this point.
I think it was literally just about the potential of A-Kid.
Oh, okay.
Of his potential.
Okay. All right. Cool. That's what we were talking about. I think he's got a high ceiling, but I do agree. I think the name A-Kid could either help or hurt him. And we've seen like really strange, you know, names kind of get over and things in the past, but just being A-Kid which I think stands for Anonymous Kid, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Almost makes it sound like he wants to blend in to the background, blend in with everybody else rather than stand out. Maybe he's doing that so he just had, you know, it's one of these things where it's like, let the in-ring work speak for itself. But as we all know, in-ring work is just one of the three things you need to be a wrestler. You need the in-ring work. You need to be able to actually, you need a good look as well, but you also need to be able to talk on the mic. He's got the look. I'm not sure about his mic skills as of right now. Anyway, I don't think he's actually been on the mic as in NXT. And quite honestly,
they are whatever. They're okay.
They're okay. I don't know if I'd ever see him in a maybe an NXT title picture. Right, getting called up to the main roster. I almost feel like he would wind up in like the Ricochet spot where, you know, he can make anybody look good with, you know, his selling and his flips and all that stuff. But I don't know if they would actually go any further than that. I don't know if he'd become like a Rey Mysterio, you know? So that's at least my immediate thoughts for what we've seen so far. But I'm sold on the guy. I really enjoy what we've seen out of him so far. And, I'm hoping that he does wind up, you know, at least in that type of a spot, you know, whether it is the Ricochet spot or not. Hell, you know, I don't even think that's necessarily a bad spot to be in. I think it's a bad spot for Ricochet. I think he could do more, but, you know, be able to go out and give somebody else a good match and get those stars over. That's somebody's got to do it, you know? So I don't think it's necessarily a bad spot to be in, but here's hoping that he has a higher ceiling than that.
Yeah, and to reiterate, when I said I thought he had a high ceiling, I guess I mean the guy could get a lot of TV time. The guy is going to get matches, and he can go, so he can get booked. But I, too, don't see him in any kind of major championship picture, and even secondary championship, I think he'd be kind of somebody who visited the scene occasionally. I think you can get him into the right tag team setting, and it could be a lot of fun if he's with more of a brutish sort of partner. I don't know, somebody like Butch. Maybe you could call him Luke or something. I don't think that he's going to be a major player on the main roster, but they apparently want to take a longer look. And as Nate said, the look is one of the three things that you really got to have. And I don't know that A-Kid totally has it. I feel like they're looking for it, but innately he doesn't have it.
Got you.
And he's cool, but I don't know if he's Vince McMahon superstar cool. Go ahead.
I understand. I wanted to discuss the reunion of Raquel and Dakota. I thought that was really a feel-good moment tonight. I know we are left to wonder what Toxic Attraction did to Wendy Chu, but I think that by having Raquel and Dakota reunite and challenge JC and Gigi on Saturday afternoon, I think that brings more star power to the women's tag title match. And I can see them putting the straps back on Raquel and Dakota. I think that would be a nice story to tell, because rare in this business do you have tag team partners be best friends, then become bitter enemies, then best friends, all within a year's time. This was quick, but it was much overdue, because I think the fans really want to cheer for Dakota Kai. And it will be interesting to see where this story goes on Saturday at Stand and Deliver. And we'll just have to wait and see. I want you guys to digest that and give me your thoughts on it. Thanks for taking my call. Have a good evening. We'll speak later in the week.
We love talking to you, Rev. Thanks for the call. Nobody wants to cheer Dakota Kai more than I do. And I do, regardless of role. So very, very happy to see her in this role. And to have this moment. It's confusing for me, because it did come out of nowhere, which is what gives me a little bit of pause and says, are they just doing this to get ahead of it, to have them together again, to quick storyline do it so they can go up to the main roster, and then they can talk about how these two are running buddies. They won the first women's tag team championships in NXT, and they can just kind of gloss over the whole fact that they had a multi-match feud. So I think they could just do that and not talk about the feud over the championship that that Dakota should have won. So I think that, gosh, I don't know. I felt like I thought I knew where each of them were headed a little more before now than I do now. It's just, like you say, I want you guys to digest it, and I'm not sure I have. It happened so quickly. Like, she turned face, but when they had their moment, I definitely was waiting for the double switch and for one to attack the other. I really, really thought that was about to happen, because there was so much bad blood. It seemed a little strong to gloss it over, even if this was meant to be a real feel-good moment. So I don't know what to take from it yet as far as their future. I'd love to see Dakota with a belt, but I'd also love to see Dakota getting that paper on the main roster, even if I'm not going to be able to watch her very much, because I can't stand the main roster shows most of the time. So I'm really torn, as I always am, with where they go with her. Tom.
Happy Dakota's baby face again. I saw Keith's tweet illustrating that he felt this was a feel-good moment, and I can't disagree. I just didn't feel the same, and not because I disagree, but just because I'm so hung up on the fact that now not one, but two Dusty Cups, a tournament that I have historically not cared about anyway. But now, both Dusty Cups, the title matches coming out of it, are featuring losers of the Dusty Cup getting title shots. Both Raquel and Dakota lost in this Dusty Cup tournament, and they are the ones getting the title shots after the people who won just decided to throw away the shot to win the belts for instead an opportunity to lose to Mandy Rose. So I was a little hung up on that. I felt that Kaylee and Io's video earlier in the night was carefully not showing the part where they were, of course, talking about turning the championship match into a fatal four-way and showing that they got there, through winning the Dusty, but not showing the moment where they were like, no, we're not going to go after the tag championships after all, even though this was a tag team tournament. And then this was just like, okay, so the losers get the shot, just like MSK lost and they're getting a shot. So that bugs me. But I don't think this was out of nowhere, because Wendy Chu's whole thing with Dakota was, or I should say Dakota's whole thing with Wendy Chu was learning to understand, even though they didn't end up winning in the end, learning to understand the value of friendship again. So I think Wendy, I mean, they could have just done this and, you know, we'd probably be in the same position, but we do at least have the arc of Dakota learning how to be friends with someone again. So there's that. And actually, I'm now remembering exactly why. Okay, so I guess I do disagree with Reverend Keith a little bit on the feel-good moment thing, because I had we've said everything that we've said about Wendy Chu, and all the same still applies, but the storyline had actually invested me in Wendy and Dakota's relationship. I had started to think it was cute, and I was curious how, after losing the Dusty Cup, which seemed like a make-or-break moment for Dakota in this friendship, I was wondering how they were going to come out of that on the other side. And had Dakota still learned, or was she just going to turn on Wendy? And honestly, it seems like Wendy's just been written out of the show.
Oh, my God. I was going to say the same thing. Like, next week,
yes,
there will be a son and mother at the show, and the son's like, where's Wendy Chu? And the mother's like, you never had a Wendy Chu, son. You never had a Wendy Chu.
Yeah, it's. I think we got, you know, the torn up pillow, and just imagine what else happened, I guess. But tonight felt like a write-off for the character, and that they want to go back to the drawing board yet again with Karen Q. I'm totally ready to be wrong about that, and then Wendy Chu just moves on as if nothing ever happened. This felt like a hard move away from that character.
Nate? Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It did really kind of seem like that, because, you know, Wendy Chu, you know, she wasn't here tonight. We saw the pillow. We saw the stuffing. We saw JC Jane throwing the stuffing. And then now Raquel Gonzalez comes back. So it did kind of seem like it was a bit of a write-off for Wendy Chu. I'm not complaining. I've been very vocal about not liking the character whatsoever. I like Karen Q. I like the wrestler, and I think she did an amazing job at portraying this character, even though it is not my favorite character. She turned, you know, at the age-old wrestling adage, turn chicken shit into chicken salad. But I'm if this is a write-off the character, even if it's a temporary write-off the character, I'm not complaining. Hopefully the character will come back and actually have some more depth to it. And because, like, as I've said before, who can see Wendy Chu as an NXT Women's Champion, right? Or even a tag team champion? I can't. And if that happened, I would be like, I'd be like beside myself, quite frankly. But I don't see her as a credible champion or anything like that. Why else would you be a wrestler in a promotion like NXT, where, you know, I mean, that's really what you're going towards, is getting the title. Not everybody's always looking for the title, but I mean, it's really kind of why you're there, right? That's kayfabe. Like, everybody wants to try and get one of these titles. So I'm hoping that it is a bit of a, you know, a rebrand, a repackage rather, for Wendy Chu. I mean, she can keep, you know, some of the sleeping stuff, I guess, but give me some more depth there. And, you know, give me some more storytelling around that particular character, and I'll be happy. As far as Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai, it did seem like, to me, like, it kind of came out of nowhere as well. When Dakota came out and she started getting beaten down, the back of my head, I went, "Up, oh, Raquel's coming out." Like, I kind of had a feeling, but it was like 2 seconds before her music actually hit that the thought came through my head. And then also, like you, Kelly, I was waiting for the double turn. I was waiting for one of the two of them to turn on each other and re-spark that feud. I wasn't necessarily expecting them to hold up the tag titles and basically kind of like lay claim to the next championship match. I'm totally fine with it. I'm cool with it. Just not what I expected to see tonight. So I think I got to give them credit for giving me something a little bit surprising that I didn't expect to see coming into tonight. Cause that's always a good thing. That's always fun. You mentioned this too, that Kelly, that, you know, them coming back together would kind of, you know, kind of gloss over the fact they were in a feud, they could get called up and, you know, hey, look, these two buddy, buddy. I didn't really think about it like that. But now that you put that seed in my head, maybe it is a way to try and get them back together, call up to the main roster, you know, maybe after Mania, shortly after Mania. Cause like that certainly would make sense. And it would kind of like give a little bit of an infusion to, you know, a relatively, I guess, a pretty stale tag division, women's tag division in, you know, the main roster. Yeah. I mean, I guess Carmella and Zelina are doing a okay job, but you know, I think Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez could do better.
Is Carmella doing an okay job? I don't know.
I was really just setting you up.
So you say that you can't see Wendy Chu as a singles champion, and I totally agree. I kind of like, I don't like the character either, but if you're going to have her, I think she's actually tailor-made to be a tag team champion with the right kind of partner. Let's say,
yeah,
somebody like Summer Rae, who's prone to like tantrums and throws them. And now you could, maybe you take Tiffany Stratton and she throws tantrums because Wendy Chu is going to sleep and her
you
chance
know
of continuing to be champion.
Like, here, just drink some orange soda.
Yeah. Well, no, I was thinking like, you know, like Tiffany Stratton or somebody like that, you know, throwing a temper tantrum and then like throwing herself down on the ground to kick and scream. But like Wendy Chu's quick with the pillow, throws it right under her head. So her head lands on the pillow. Yeah. You know, something like that. I could totally get down with, you know, some sort of a comedic tag team or whatever, but not with Dakota Kai.
All right. So we actually had some matches on this show. We've only talked about the main event. Let me run through some with you. Folks, I said there were bangers one and all, so I can't believe we ignored them. MSK and LA Knight were defeated by Imperium in the opener in about 12 minutes. Missed the first half of that match because I was in a traffic snarl thanks to an accident. Ivy Nile defeats Tiffany Stratton when Saray reappears. She's got her power back, folks. In 3:29, Nile over Stratton. Briggs and Jensen defeat Legado del Fantasma in the second match in a row to end via distraction. So, yes, Briggs and Jensen, but Electra Lopez gets involved, and Fallon Henley fights with her on the outside. Bodie Hayward loses to Von Wagner. We didn't really linger on this. Bodie is kind of okay. He's over with the crowd. That's cool. The Chase U thing seems to be over with the crowd. But, man, they just have lost every match out there. I don't know how you just keep throwing them to the wolves here. But what else do you do with them this early, I guess? Draco Anthony, it seems like they had a storyline going with him being potentially brought into the Joe Gacy fold. But then he just beat him, and we had the Quincy Elliott looking thirstily at Harland thing, and then we went to commercial. That was it. And Nikita Lyons beat Sloane Jacobs in a minute 45 in a match where I can only say they both need some work. Lash Legend showed up on the Tron afterwards and cut down Nikita Lyons. I will say Lash did pretty well in this particular instance in the feud that they said clearly will not be part of, she said, after Stand and Deliver, I got business with you. Funny that they would put a cap on themselves and say, okay, so we're not going to be on that show. We know that. But we'll have a match after that. So those are your matches. Talk about them in full, in part, in none. Tom.
Well, I'll do all three, starting from the beginning. So without working myself up by going into it, Zachary Wentz has had some allegations come out against him, and he was already booked into this match. He's already booked into Stand and Deliver, and it seems like they were conscious, and they being NXT, were conscious of not wanting him to be highlighted too much and just get boos rained down upon him. So that's why they had the sneak attack. Imperium enters first, and then Dez and Wentz. I still...
Nash Carter and Wesley.
Still can't, okay, see, I can't remember their new names, but they've been going by them long enough that I also can't remember their old names except for Zachary Wentz. I think it's Dez. Yeah, Desmond Xavier. And then something with a T is the guy who didn't get signed. Anyway, they do the sneak attack, so there's a way to avoid the rain of boos during their entrance. And then Wentz didn't tag in but twice. Once was to immediately tag out to Wesley and do a couple of exciting like tandem things. And then the second time was to take the fall. So they're keeping him unhighlighted for tonight. And this, of course, is swirling around. We didn't really get any further intrigue in this regard, but this is all swirling around the mystery tag team who killed the Creeds. And you and I talked about it last week, Nate, and I said, like, oh, well, you know, I still think it's MSK because, you know, it just seems so obvious, and this will be a heel turn, and they'll win the titles because they're changing their characters, and they're going to try to breathe some life into this, you know, tag team that just has not really found their groove on the brand yet. And the pushback to that, of course, is like, well, they showed both of these guys' hands in that video, and the hands were white. And I said, well, the guy in the back was far enough away, and it was dark enough, and I think they were careful to not show the black hand side, as it was called in that 1973 movie, Five on the Black Hand Side. And I rewatched the video, and Nate, you were absolutely right. I don't know what I was seeing. They showed both sides of the hand quite a lot, and as white as the milk he was pouring on Diamond Mine's gear. So I now think that Doc Bruce is correct, and I'm not sure if Doc Bruce publicized this. He probably put it in his report. I need to check that. But Doc Bruce's theory is now that it's pretty deadly from NXT UK. And I don't know how I didn't think of them, because I actually did think of, like, oh, what if it's an NXT UK team? And even though I've seen their stuff before and I like them quite a bit, I mean, they look like the Vampire Lestat as a tag team, which is, well, I mean, one of them is named Stoker, so clearly that's the kind of thing that they're going for. You know, I don't know. I just don't know why I didn't think of them. But two reasons why Bruce is definitely right, and it's definitely them. We see the boot of the guy who walks by after knocking over the camera, and it looks like sparkly, sort of. Like, I don't know. It looks like a boot that Sam Stoker would wear. And one of the texts that they sent said, enjoy the view, which really sounds like something that Pretty Deadly would say. So it's Pretty Deadly. Thank you, Doc Bruce, for the tip-off. Nile versus Stratton. I saw this advertised yesterday, and I was like, oh boy, we're in for a great episode of NXT. Anything else can happen on this thing. I'm going to get to see Ivy Nile versus Tiffany Stratton. And, you know, assuming it wasn't just a Saray sneak attack, there was some humor on Twitter after I tweeted something like, I hope we get at least 3 minutes before Saray inevitably interferes. And people were like, holy crap, it went like just over three and Saray, you know, interfered. But yeah, so Ivy Nile has just been such a standout. And I gushed about her on Bonus Point, got a number of people, like a handful of people, reaching back out to me after listening to it and going like, yes, I totally agree with you about Ivy Nile. Of course, I've gushed over and over about Tiffany Stratton, so this is just a fun matchup for me, even if, for as quick as it was to see them gelling with one another. Ivy Nile, I mean, I guess you could call this heel. Ivy is very popular with the crowd. She is doing the Tatum Paxley thing again, like trying to, I guess, like, not hazing isn't the word, but trying to, like, bully Paxley out of Diamond Mine as Paxley's trying to get into Diamond Mine. I thought they had dropped that since they hadn't shown it to us in a week or three. But it's still going on, so cool. And as much as I love Tiffany Stratton and what she's shown from us so far and how I feel like her ceiling is limitless in WWE, she is, the more we see her, the more we can see that she's still putting certain elements together. There were, I didn't write down the specific moments. There were, one was an Irish whip where she originally wasn't facing the correct direction and she had to reposition, and Ivy just sort of had to wait for her to reposition. And there was a pinning combination that didn't go quite perfectly, but in both of those instances, we saw her think on her feet. She realized in the moment, she realized immediately that she needed to fix something, and she knew exactly how to fix it. So she's very, very quick at fixing these little mix-ups. So that's promising. And she's doing it all while still factoring in the gymnastics and factoring in her character work. She's balancing a lot of stuff here. I'm just so, so impressed, even though she still has work to do, but we're seeing good things. And what was next? The tag match was a good match. Yay for everybody. And then Wagner versus Hayward. I like Bodie Hayward quite a bit. I think both of these wrestlers, like, I don't know if you could go as far as to call it an interesting matchup, but both of these wrestlers are very controlled in that, like, you know, trained up through the WWE system kind of control, but they both make what they're doing look extemporaneous. Wagner with his weird footwork and Hayward with his explosive energy. Like, I like how, I just everything he does looks extemporaneous. It doesn't look like, oh, I'm doing this spot now. So that's a little, I don't know, je ne sais quoi about him, I suppose. Draco versus Gacy. I always expected the Draco Anthony thing with, assuming he doesn't pop back up again, I always figured that the Draco Anthony thing with Gacy and Harland was going to end with just a squash match. I figured that it was going to be Harland doing the squashing. I think we did get that, actually, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right?
So too.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I remember Harland doing like that crazy splash on him. Looked really good. So we got that. And yeah, I didn't expect it to end in any more complex a way than this. Although last week they did the little locker room segment where Zion Quinn came up to Draco and said, like, hey man, if you need anything, I got your back, or whatever he said. And I was like, oh boy, we're going to get a Zion Quinn and Harlan standoff. I am looking forward to that. They're going to stare each other down and that's how the segment's going to end. And we're going to wonder what they're, you know, what the match is going to look like. And no Zion Quinn at all tonight. So a little, I don't know, maybe a change in direction. Maybe there's more to come. But yeah, they had me expecting something that they didn't deliver on, but glad that they clearly see something in Quincy Elliott, because I've only seen two of his matches and I see something in the guy. And yeah, I kind of thought, you know, Kelly, you said thirsty, and Nate phrased it another kind of way. And I was kind of like, I don't know. He just looked like he was standing behind him and focusing on him. But then Quincy put on Instagram a little bit ago, love is blind. So you guys were seeing the right thing there. Nikita versus Sloane. I didn't, you know, for obvious reasons, because she's just been, even though it seems like a very calculated choice not to have put Nikita back in the ring on television again so quickly, she's such a work in progress. I was exclusively looking at Nikita here because she is the one that we've been thinking about. Sloane is very new. I'll go back and watch the match and see if there's anything I can pick apart there. But Nikita, this was better than her match against Kayla Inlay. maybe that says something about Kayla Inlay, whom I've been quite critical of in various ways, but particularly with the sandbagging, although I have also said that in the case of Nikita, Nikita kind of deserved the sandbag where she got it. But you guys are all getting, previews into bonus point if you're not VIP right now. Nikita, she was better here, starting from the excruciatingly low bar of her prior match. She's still purposelessly wandering between spots, and yet again, she does the same split leg finish, but she sets up for it and then just sort of wanders off to the side so she can then have like the tiniest little bit of a running start to get into it. And it's like, have you seen the people's elbow? Have you seen any of these types of finishes before? You don't just walk away and walk back. Do something. Entertain us. You know, it's not all about, you know, yes, we're all looking at your hips. They're wonderful. But come on. And I will say that all of her, like, flourishy moves, like there's one kick she does where it looks like she's doing, like, 2.5 spins before she tries to make contact. And it's like, all right, that's way too much of a flourish here. I know this is pro wrestling, but that's just about as fake as somebody holding themselves up in the corner to get stomped. You know, if you're spinning that much, so, you know, somebody who's actually trying to beat you is going to take you down. So, but moral of the story is that it was a little bit better than last time. So good for her, I guess. I'm curious how the Nikita and Lash is going to go.
Yeah, me too. Oh boy.
Yeah.
That split-legged finish looks like it has all the impact of Mojo Rawley's sitting, which is a little look into the VIP show NXT 8 years back. Yeah, it just doesn't look like impact. Genuinely stunned that you didn't catch the thirst in Quincy Elliott, because he was laying it on. Really?
Oh, he was.
Thick, dude. It was
really. They,
oh
yeah.
My God! Yeah,
yeah.
It was,
I don't know.
Very,
maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that was like in the exact moment that I went to our group chat to like say who he was, because I actually missed a lot of the match because I was just staring at him the whole time.
Yeah, he actually like was standing behind Harlan, and you can very clearly see his eyes doing up down, and then like he kind of like pointed right at Harlan's backside. It was interesting. It was interesting for sure.
Harlan, and congratulations to Harlan. He just got married.
Oh, did he? All right. Well, see, that's the thing. Quincy just wants what he can't have. Now he sees the guy's a good husband. And now he's
see,
all
we yeah. Nate, you're thinking what I'm thinking, right?
I am, yes.
He wants what he can't have. Yes, okay, all right, yeah. Making sure.
JD always wants what he can't have.
Oh, these idiots over here.
Oh, by the way, this is the last bowl of cereal.
Okay,
well, pancakes in the silverware drawer. Anyway,
you know what? Why is there silverware in the pancake drawer? What's up?
God, I love me some scrubs. All right, so let's see. Well,
speaking
I'm gonna
scrubs these two idiots.
Nate,
go ahead.
Okay, so I'm gonna start with Nikita Lyons, Sloane Jacobs, because hey, that's where we just were. I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add that Tom hasn't already brought up. I'm not high on Nikita Lyons. I don't necessarily see it. I definitely see a look. But mic skills are certainly subpar in the ring. Tonight, I admit, she was certainly better than I've seen in the past, but she's still very green in the ring. I feel like she relies way too much on her opponent to make her look good than actually be able to wrestle well. I hopefully that changes, but you know, right now I still just see Instagram model trying to play a pro wrestler. So, you know, hopefully that perception changes. I don't necessarily want to dislike anybody, right? I want to see these people succeed, but I don't necessarily think they're putting her in a spot to succeed right now. I could be wrong, but you know, we'll see, you know, four months down the line, we'll see where she's at. But as of right now, I'm not sold on her at all. Scrolling up here, looking at Joe Gacy and Draco Anthony. I mean, I was certainly expecting this match, or Draco Anthony to get squashed, like you said, Kelly. I assumed it was going to be at the hands of Harland, not necessarily Gacy. But yeah, I did kind of expect Draco Anthony to be staring at the lights at the end of this feud. Now, granted, this may not be the end of the feud. You know, we did see some stuff with Zion Quinn a few weeks ago, as Tom brought up. So we could certainly see, you know, a tag team match or something along those lines. I don't know where that necessarily leads. Are they going, you know, I mean, I could see Zion Quinn as somebody in a cult, I guess, kind of. So, I mean, I don't know if maybe they try to pull him into this whole thing, because, like, from the get-go, I thought that Joe Gacy was going to try and do some sort of a Bray Wyatt-esque type gimmick and have at least more than one person as a follower. I don't know if Draco Anthony and Zion Quinn are necessarily those people, or if they're even going to necessarily go beyond Harland, you know, with this kind of quote. I'm just using the word cult for lack of a better term. I could kind of see that being a potential way to end this, potential way for this to go. So we'll kind of see. But Quincy Elliott was really the big thing for me here. At first I thought he was a fan. I kind of described a little bit ago to Tom there. I quite honestly just thought he was a fan in the background that was like, just in the frame, like right place, right time. And, you know, like Kevin Dunn, whoever is Kevin Dunn's equivalent in NXT, probably being, you know, kind of pissed off. But then it was actually right after I saw that I saw your message, Tom, in our little chat saying who Quincy Elliott was. So, you know, that's kind of where I figured, okay, well, he's not actually just a fan. But I'm really curious to see where this goes. I was not necessarily expecting to see somebody like eyeballing Harland like a piece of meat. So I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued. You know, as we talked about earlier, he is a member of the LGBTQ community. So I'm kind of curious to see how they fit that into this character. If I'm assuming they're going to fit this into that character, if kind of that's, those are the looks and things that he was giving, you know, another male wrestler. I'm on board with it. I'd love to see a positive LGBT character, you know, in wrestling or in WWE specifically. You know, we've never really had one that we've had people that have been, you know, gay, lesbian, whatnot, you know, but their characters necessarily weren't. Why can't I think of his name? Not Titus O'Neil, but
Fred Ross.
Darren Young.
You know, him being the first person that came to mind, even though I couldn't necessarily think of the name Darren Young. So I'd love to see something like that. I think that would be fantastic. I just hope, and Bruce actually brought this up in our, I think it was Bruce that brought this up in our chat. I just hope that John Laurinaitis and Bruce Pritchard can be tasteful and tactful with that particular character. That's all I'm going to say about that. Von Wagner and Bodie Hayward. It was a kind of a fun match. Obviously, we got to see Jack of Time doing their Japanese commentary, which we touched on earlier in the night. Von Wagner, I called him the king of the creator wrestler attire, because even though he's got different attire and it looks a little bit better than the, you know, his Von Wagner debut attire, it's still like, you know, page one creator wrestler tights on WWE 2K22, you know. I really like to see him get some better attire. But regardless, I do like the pairing of him and Robert Stone. Robert Stone actually finally doesn't feel like a failure, which, you know, he kind of actually seems like he's finally got his footing and he finally found the client that's going to, you know, make him money after toiling around so long with, you know, God, just so many people beforehand. So I thought that was cool. Bodie Hayward, at first, I didn't recognize him just because usually he's got the long hair with the red headband where he had it in a ponytail. I just, I didn't recognize them whatsoever. I even, you know, I said to these guys earlier, like, who's Red Headband? And then immediately after I typed that in, I saw Chase and I was like, oh my God, that's got to be Bodie Hayward. All right. So of course I couldn't remember his name right away. I had to Google it, but regardless, it was
if only they had said his name several times leading up to the match, like beforehand, this guy.
I mean, you know, in my defense, Corbin's really wanted to play all day long. My God, trying to work from home with a dog that just wants to play all day long. Yeah. Granted, I'm sure people understand that with kids and things like that, but you know what? I don't have kids. I got a dog. Back to wrestling. Yeah, so that's really all I got to say about Von Wagner and Brody Hayward. It was a cool match. And I'm kind of interested to see where they go with Von Wagner. I think he's been booked pretty strong. I think he's still a little bit two dimensional, but his mic work needs a little bit of work, but I think that's kind of across the board in NXT. Mic work is not something that a lot of the people, especially the 2.0 class, if you will, their mic work isn't necessarily a huge strong suit for a lot of those guys, guys and gals for that matter. Legado del Fantasma versus Brooks and Jensen. I did it again. Briggs and Jensen. Again, fun match. I think one thing that did the match a bit of a disservice was the fact that commentary was just talking about anything but the match for, I think, more than half of it. They first started talking about the Mysterios coming down to NXT. Then they started talking about the Mysterios versus the Miz and Lucha Logan. It actually just pained me to say that, Lucha Logan. But that's what they said. They started talking about that. Then they started talking about Santos Escobar and the North American title ladder match, which, I mean, all makes sense because all of those angles, do kind of play into the people involved in this match. But I don't remember the exact spots, but there were a few, spots going on that they should have called out and paid attention to, but instead they were too busy talking about everything else going on. So I think that was really my biggest complaint about that match. Other than that, though, I like it. I like the addition of Fallon Henley. We talked about that a bit last week as well. Her switch in character a little bit to kind of be more of that country girl for as I called them stupidly in my hits and misses, the Tractor Doors, because we had the Luchadors with Legado del Fantasma, but these, the country boys, the Tractor Doors. It was a terrible joke, but I'm still rolling with it. I like the fact that she's now with them. I think she's a good addition to that team. She's somebody that I'm keeping my eye on for sure. I've really liked what we've seen out of her so far. Then I'm going to skip over Ivy Nile and Tiffany Stratton for a second. I'm going to move into MSK, LA Knight, and Imperium. And one of the reasons I'm doing that is I don't have a whole lot to say about this match that hasn't already been talked about. I certainly thought it was a great, fun, bombastic six-man tag. I'm not usually a fan of six-man tags, but this was a little bit better than average. Gunther and LA Knight kind of, escaping out of the match and fighting through the crowd. I thought it was kind of a nice touch to get out of the match. I wasn't sure how they were going to do this, but I think it was a good way to get out of the match. Coming up on Stand and Deliver here, Creed Brothers versus MSK and Imperium. I'm really curious to see where this ends up playing out. There's part of me that kind of thinks it's Creed Brothers' time, but there's also part of me that thinks with how strongly Gunther's, and it still pains me to call him Gunther, how strong Gunther is being pushed and how strong Imperium is being pushed. I'm not sure if it's necessarily time to take the titles off of them yet. At least as of right now, I'm leaning towards an Imperium retention, but if not, I really hope it's the Creed Brothers finally getting some gold around their waist. And not only I think it's deserved, but I think they're probably the most credible tag team that I can think of right now that could go up against somebody like Imperium. Just taking the gimmick at face value for Imperium, they've been defined down quite a bit over the past year or so. But right now, they're trying to build them as those ring generals again. So I think it'd be really cool to see the Creed Brothers walk away. For me, anyway, it'd be really cool to see the Creed Brothers walk away with the titles around their waist. Ivy Nile and Tiffany Stratton, this was an absolute delight for me. I wasn't quite sure what to expect out of this match as everybody was making their entrance and all that. Because Ivy Nile, even though I'm high on her, the past couple times I saw her in the ring, there were, you know, a couple things left to be desired in her ring work. Same thing with Tiffany Stratton, although less so over the past handful of weeks. I think this was probably the best match that they've both had on NXT TV. Other than those few things that Tom pointed out, a couple sloppy spots, this for the most part was a pretty crisp and clean match. In terms of ring work, I think both of them worked incredibly well together, and it was one of the more fun matches on this card for me to watch. Even though it was only about what you said, 3 minutes, 14 seconds long, something like that. I did figure Saray was probably going to wind up in this match as well. Interfering in some point, but so what is what it is. I would have loved to see this match get a little bit more time. I think it was 41, 45 minutes of wrestling. You said, Kelly, on this show, certainly not the, 50, 60, 70 plus minutes we were watching, 6 months, a year ago. But, I kind of wish they did add a little bit more time to this match. I would have loved to see the two of them mix up a little bit more. And I think that leaves me, Nope, that leaves me with just about all that. Those are all the matches. There we go.
I think that they did about as much as these two can do together at this point. I thought it was okay. They had a moment that was really bizarre where I don't remember if it was a Boston Crab or what kind of temporary submission move they were in, but both girls got distracted and looked to the right, like clearly waiting for something, completely broke character. And then about 15 seconds later, Saray made her appearance. So they were basically just like looking for it or like getting, maybe a producer was giving them a signal or something, but it was very odd the way they looked. And I thought that'd be the most awkward moment on the show. And then we had the moment where Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez were supposed to back into each other, and Raquel misses her mark and does it late. And then when she finally does the moment where she's supposed to back into Dakota Kai, she turns around to see where Dakota is and continues walking backwards while looking at Dakota, puts her head forward at the last second. So when she backs into Dakota, she can act surprised that she just walked into the person that she looked at herself walking into. I don't know how many people saw it, but it was the worst thing I've seen in the ring in a long time in NXT. Just had to get that out. That was bad, and now I want to watch it again because it actually made me laugh in real time. I think the only thing that we didn't talk about was Bron Breakker and Dolph Ziggler's hard sell for their main event match. I assume the main event match on Saturday, and it was good. Bron Breakker didn't yell, and I wrote that down, and it sounds like I'm kidding, but I say it was a genuine delight that he used his inside voice. I really dig what he is able to accomplish. He is so good when doing these understated promos. He's good enough at them that it makes me forget that that he's a Steiner and he's not supposed to be good at understated moments. But let's see a few more of those and keep the yelling to a minimum, because it's just not that cool. And Dolph showed that once again. It's not like he's going to make me one of these guys who says he's the most underused guy of all time and he should be a 15-time championship champion by now. And we know that the head injuries had a lot to do with them not wanting to go all the way with him at times. And I'm not going to die on the hill that he was underused, but he really can sell that main event match. That dismissive prick heel that says he's just going down there to elevate NXT. Well, he said to make them relevant. And then I fly back on my jet and get back on tour. I dug all that too. So hard sell for that was the one other thing. We had some emails. We have kind of covered much of what was on them. I'm going to read two of them, throw to you guys, and then read the last one. This is from JB from Detroit. Number one, the Ciampa segment gave me goosebumps. If this really is his swan song, what a ride it was, and I really hope he gets a fair shot on Raw or SmackDown. Number two, Ziggler's segment was really good. He came across as arrogant and bigger than NXT and saying no one knew who Braun was, and that's why he had to do all the media. He achieved his goal and wanting me to see him get beat up. Number three, Cora Jade's segment was really good as well. She came across as genuine and framed Mandy as an entitled diva carryover. She accomplished her goal the same as Ziggler. Number four, do you guys see anyone from NXT appearing on nights one or two of Mania after stand and deliver? Okay, we kind of covered that. Cora Jade, it was a big step forward. There's work to be done. And genuine, oh boy, I don't throw that word around much, and I'm not sure I'm ready to go that far, but I thought that this was a big step forward for her. Next step is to see that in the ring, because it's a little easier to do that in the controlled environment of pre-tape. This is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope the CML finds you well. Tonight's episode was quite busy, but the main storyline elements seem to be in place for stand and deliver. Now the major storylines are in place. Which match are you most excited to see, and which one screams dud? I have my fingers crossed that WrestleMania weekend will go well, and I hope we are singing its praises come next Tuesday night. Other than Ciampa, do you expect any other – talked about that again. Go VIP. IB office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Okay, so match that I'm most excited for. That's a good question. I think the championship match. I think Breaker Ziggler, because I genuinely don't know what they're going to do. And I feel like I usually do know what they're going to do with the world championship match. In the past, I've been wrong a couple times. They've thrown surprises at us, but I feel like I've typically known where that was going to go, and I don't. I'm interested to see all of them, because all of them have intrigue, whether that is storyline intrigue or development intrigue. The one that I think has the largest chance to be a dud, I hate to say it, but Ciampa and D'Angelo don't match up super well. I haven't gotten into their matches all that much. I also think it's easy for me to disengage with triple threat tags. I've also seen a lot of ladder matches, but I remain fairly interested in them, I guess. But triple threat tags are easy for me to disengage from. But I do feel that the Creeds being in it will be a breath of fresh air, because it won't just be spot, 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 because they will be laying the smackdown. But they will not win the match, because Pretty Deadly will cost them the match. Hopefully people will know who Pretty Deadly is, if indeed that is the way that this is headed. Tom, on these questions.
Really relying on the Creeds to save that one, because I think I'm looking at that one to be the dud. Just because it's these guys that we've seen wrestle over and over, I despite their individual talents, I'm not that interested in Fabian and Marcel continuing as the Imperium tag team. Marcel in particular, I really liked what he was doing before he was on TV, and he's just been this ever since. I'm not super thrilled about the card, which I feel bad saying. I agree with you. The build has been good. I almost feel like in a weird way, a responsibility to look forward to it, because I've been a 2.0 defender, and I don't think this, my lack of anticipation for this particular card reflects on that. It's just this, I think it's an issue of doing these very special episodes so constantly, and the last one was just like 3 weeks ago. So I think that is the key issue as to why I'm not as excited for this one. I agree with you about Ciampa and D'Angelo. I said last week that unless they really want to get the crowbar over more than D'Angelo himself, Ciampa should just win on his way out here. And I'm not trying to insult D'Angelo, who has an upside. We're harsh on him. There's something there. But the heel version of this character is no good. And it doesn't even feel close to the league that Ciampa's in. Very few are in the league that Ciampa's in, but Tony D'Angelo as the heel version of himself is barely there. So it really feels like, okay, I'm not trying to be a fanboy here. I think the right move is just to let Ciampa win his final match in NXT. Let's see what else was in. Did I say? Dolph Ziggler versus Braun Breaker. The vast majority of NXT's premium events, you could just say the women's championship match by default is the one I'm looking forward to. But it is Ziggler versus Breaker here because that is the best built and the one with the most intrigue and ramifications. And yes, part of that is because of what we saw in Ziggler's promo or Ziggler's video package here. Speaking of Ciampa, and not speaking of, but I'm going to bring up the fact that people, Ziggler's saying all the things he's saying, and a lot of the rhetoric around it from in our circles is like, oh, well, it makes NXT look so bad because, you know, Ziggler's been, you know, nothing on the main roster for so long, and he goes down there and becomes the champion, so NXT is so far defined down. I mean, it really doesn't bother me, especially when you look at the fact that if they're going to be either releasing or calling up the player coaches like Tommaso Ciampa, this is the alternative, is to have people like AJ or to this greater extent here, Dolph, go down and Bobby Roode go down and work with these people. So I'm totally in favor with what they've been doing with Dolph here. And this video was just fantastic work. I love that Dolph's heel act is being the good business champion. And I think the unspoken piece of this, the little bit where it was supposed to be like something that was caught. Yeah, I'm sure he knew that cameras were rolling, but you know, something that wasn't intended for air was him kind of saying like, oh yeah, you know, been doing this WrestleMania thing for so many years. When I enter the room, people are actually happy to see me with Braun Breaker. They don't even know who he is. I think he's doing local radio. Meanwhile, I've got like 500 interviews. The unspoken piece of this. Well, then I'm not saying that they should have said this, but I enjoy it because Bobby Roode isn't just Dolph's tag team partner, but also has been involved in the storyline. Bobby Roode's NXT Championship character was saying that he wanted to remold NXT in his own way, and I don't think he ever phrased it this way, but he was basically doing a heel thing where he was telling the NXT audience, boo me because I want to turn your special little NXT into a main roster style product. I want to turn it into Raw and SmackDown with all of my, you know, star power and money, primarily the money. And Dolph and the way that he's framing his championship, it's the embodiment of the version of NXT Bobby Roode said he wanted to forge to get his own heel heat. So I'm enjoying that little detail of it. I will just skip back to JB's email and the detail, the wrinkle on his question about NXT wrestlers appearing on the main roster was specifically regarding whether they would appear on nights one or two of WrestleMania. I do not think so. I don't think there is a chance at all for anybody from NXT to appear at WrestleMania. Gable Steveson appears to be skipping over NXT. And he is going to have some kind of presence at Mania. Still not sure what he's going to do. I mean, they might just cut to him in the crowd and talk about next in line for a moment. Honestly, I wouldn't even expect them to do that much. Just cut to him in the crowd, talk him up a little bit about his collegiate Greco-Roman career. But I don't expect that. And JB continues on to suggest that maybe Breaker, Gunther, or Raquel could be the people who appear. And we spoke about Braun and Raquel earlier. We did not, none of us, I don't think, brought up Gunther. I do not think so. I think Gunther is the next NXT champion. So I think that he's still going to remain on this brand for a while.
Nate.
All right, we'll start with Kevin's email because that's the one I have up on my screen at the moment. As far as the match, I'm looking forward to seeing the most. Granted, I'm actually, unlike what, you know, Tom was saying here, I'm actually looking forward to just about every match on the card for, you know, one reason or another. I think the tag team match, Imperium versus Creed versus MSK, is probably going to be the dud. I agree there. You know, MSK and Imperium, how many times have we seen these guys wrestle? The addition of the Creed brothers sure is a little bit of a wild card and a little bit of a variable there, but I think out of every other match on the card, that's the one that's probably going to be the one where I might get up to go, you know, get some snacks or, you know, hit the bathroom or something like that. The one I'm looking forward to the most, I think, is Ciampa versus Tony D'Angelo. And that's not necessarily because of the match, but it's because it's the swan song for Tommaso Ciampa, supposedly the swan song for Tommaso Ciampa. You know, if we are to believe what they are feeding us right now here, makes sense considering, you know, he has been showing up on the main roster and things like that. So I'm going with that, the fact that he is getting called up. So I'm looking forward to that one the most, simply because it's going to be an emotional match. Ciampa's one of my guys. You know, I've really, really grown to appreciate what he's brought to the table and what he's done for NXT. You know, since coming up, you know, in with DIY and the whole feud between him and Gargano was just absolutely phenomenal as far as I'm concerned. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to the NXT championship match for a lot of the reasons you guys brought up, as well as the North American championship match. I think that's going to be, it's going to be a very bombastic match. It's going to be interesting to see who walks out on top. I'm really rooting for Cameron Grimes, but, I think you could really make a case for just about anybody in the match. So, you know, we'll kind of see how that winds up playing out. Skipping back down over to JB's email here. So really I'm just kind of rereading it real quick here. So the only thing I really have to kind of mention is kind of talk on Cora Jade. I really did like the Cora Jade segment tonight. It seemed very well produced, and she actually seemed like she was kind of comfortable with what she was talking about. As Kelly said, that does need to translate into in front of a live audience or even just doing a live, you know, live backstage segment or something like that. Yeah. Pre-tape is a completely different beast, but I do feel like she actually came across as, more competent, I guess, tonight. I still think she's the major underdog in that match going into Stand and Deliver. Which kind of makes me think she might wind up with the title. But I think it's kind of anybody's game here. I kind of think I hate to see Mandy Rose lose the belt, and those are words I never thought would come out of my mouth. But I don't know if it's necessarily time to kind of move on from Toxic Attraction. If she does wind up losing the belt, I'm kind of wondering how much longer, JC Jay and Gigi Dolin are going to be holding on to their NXT tag team titles. I've kind of grown to like this whole toxic attraction, having all the titles a la Undisputed Era type of a deal. It's been cool. It's been interesting and it's been fun TV. So, more so than I thought it would be. So I'm not sure if I'm necessarily ready to see her lose the belt, but quite frankly, I think I would be, I think no matter who wins the women's Fatal 4-Way, I'm going to be okay with it. You know, Mandy Rose for the reasons I brought up, Cora Jade for the reasons I brought up, Io Shirai, Kaylee Ray, who's going to complain if they're champion? Yeah, we just know we're going to get some badass matches out of them. So I'm cool with that. And then as far as, one and two have kind of already touched on already. Four in JB's email, do you guys see anyone from NXT appearing on Nights 1 and 2 of Mania after Stand and Deliver? If so, who? Not necessarily at Mania. I don't think that the only way I could see something like that happening is if for some reason Dolph Ziggler has some sort of a presence at WrestleMania and Bron Breakker attacked him. That's it. Other than that, I don't think there's going to be any involvement from NXT at WrestleMania. And even what I just brought up, I think there's a slim chance of that actually happening. But like actually going up to the main roster, we've already kind of talked about that as well. So I think that's going to do it for me for the mailbag.
Okay, let's go to Steve Repsher's email. Hello, gentlemen. Hope all is well. My question is more broad in nature. Are there too many events going on at WrestleMania week? I ask because this is the first time all of the wrestling world has converged on the Mania site post-pandemic. At last count, there are 31 in-ring shows scheduled Thursday through Sunday night. More importantly, it's the first time since A, the move of SmackDown to Fridays, and B, the expansion of Mania to two nights. WWE itself doesn't even have enough time and space for everything. Piggybacking the Hall of Fame on top of SmackDown and shoehorning NXT into a Saturday afternoon slot. Is NXT getting a fair shake in the scheduling? Is it too much of an ask for fans who try to get a taste of everything, not to mention other promotions, WrestleCon, Access, etc.? I, for one, don't know how if I could pull off going to three shows in just over 24 hours between Friday and Saturday. Take care, get rested, and well-stocked. It's going to be a long weekend. Because WrestleMania is so long, I drink Hefeweizen beer from Weinstephaner because it's not very strong. That's what I have to drink if I want to drink during WrestleMania because of the length of the show. Are there too many events going on, and are the others getting a fair shake because WWE itself has so much? WWE just wants you to think that that's the only show in town, so they don't care about that. Is NXT getting a fair shake? No, but that is not the intent of WWE right now. They are throwing that show out there. I'm sure they want it to do well, but it's not what they're trying to focus on. I just don't think they care about it nearly as much as they do the actual WrestleMania proper. I could go to three shows in the span of 24 some hours. I think I've done two in 24 hours, three or four times. I've never done three. It would tax me, I suppose, but I could do it because I watch that much wrestling at home quite often. I guess too much of a good thing. Is it a problem or not? You can't blame these companies for trying to cash in on literally the highest profile time to do so, Nate.
Yeah, I can't necessarily disagree with any of these companies trying to, capitalize on having a ton of wrestling fans in one particular city all at the same time. Looking at 31 in-ring shows scheduled, like that's crazy. Obviously not WWE shows. Those are, we've got a lot of indie stuff in there as well. But I had no idea it was 31. That's nuts. It's like, how do you even pick which one you want to go to? Right. Especially if you're going to try and hit, Stand and Deliver, Mania, that's a big ask. I think it probably, in terms of WWE, like what Steve brought up, it doesn't seem like they even have enough time, we were talking about it before we went on air, about what we're going to do for, Stand and Deliver post show. We're still not necessarily sure because of the time that Stand and Deliver takes place, neither Kelly nor Tom can actually watch or do the podcast directly after. So like right there, that's an inconvenience for us. I'm sure it's certainly an inconvenience for other people. I mean, right as it stands right now, we're basically spending our entire weekend watching wrestling, which I mean, isn't necessarily a bad thing, I guess, for a wrestling fan, but like, I mean, I got other things that I kind of had to try and squeeze in this weekend and, a life. So I'm sure that's kind of the things for everybody else. Like, how many people are really going to be able to watch SmackDown? They're going to be able to watch the Hall of Fame, Stand and Deliver, Mania Night 1, Mania Night 2. I'm sure a lot of people will, but I'm sure there's also a lot of people that aren't going to necessarily be able to find and make the time to do all of that. As far as doing a disservice to NXT by having it on, you know, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it is. But as Kelly said, they don't really care right now. That's not their main focus. They're not trying to build NXT as a brand. They're kind of using it as a brand, but they're really using it as developmental territory now, as we all know. So, it's clearly not the direction they're trying to go. I think that kind of gives, you know, that's kind of my answer for everything. It's just, there's going to be a lot of wrestling this weekend. I think Kelly might be muted. So Tom, if you want to jump in.
Did I miss a text saying, hey, Tom, just take it because I'm stepping away?
No. Do you hear me now? We hear you now.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. This has been happening twice a week now all of a sudden it cuts out. Then I hear like whale noises and it finally comes back after like 7 seconds.
That Minnesota internet, man, I'm telling you.
You know what? It's been great. But when I went to unlimited data, it's like, well, you might say a slowdown and they say it with that voice. I don't know why they do.
Yeah.
But they got to do it. So I heard, oh, you know, it's going to be a little slower. Nate was, I heard him winding down and, folks, I do get goofy. So I was like, oh, they're going to think that I went to the bathroom at a really stupid time. Okay.
That's precisely what we thought.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is not what happened. So I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games. Nate.
I am Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I did get up on pwtorch.com through the course of this podcast. WordPress finally decided not to be a little bitch. It allowed me to post it finally. So you guys can check it out if you'd like. And also to be sure to check out DEGETIME, Deege Time over at YouTube if you're interested in role-playing games and ways you can use them in a therapeutic manner.
And I am Tom Staup. And this has been my final PWT Talks NXT as part of the regular group of co-hosts. I wasn't going to say anything because normally I don't. Like, I've moved a lot in my life, and even when I move away from places, I just don't say goodbye. It's like it's too much trouble, and I think there's a self-confidence thing there too. But I realized just a couple days ago, like I've got a responsibility to tell you guys. I mean, we've had a lot of really dedicated listeners for a long time, and I really value and respect that relationship. So I've got to just not disappear from this particular podcast. And it's weird. I knew it would be. It's weird even saying it out loud and making it real because, and this is something, you know, Kelly, Nate, and I have discussed this, and it's there was ample notice and all of that. But it's weird because I still enjoy watching the show. I still enjoy covering the show in this format. This is something that I have liked doing for the years. I'm very honored to have been a founding member of the podcast, thanks to Wade Keller's invitation. I even told Kelly I wouldn't go long with this whole bit, but you know, Kelly's known me long enough that he knows what it actually means when I say that, even if I don't realize it myself. But I just got to a point in my own life that I won't bore you guys with the details, but I got to a point where I needed to excise something. I needed to excise some area of my mental bandwidth of my weekly routine. And this one unfortunately made the most sense just to try to carve out something positive for myself moving forward. Again, I won't bore you with the details. If anybody's concerned, first of all, you shouldn't be. Second of all, you're welcome to reach out. But now that I say that, don't worry. I won't feel bad if you don't. I will miss it, but I think it's something that I need to do right now for myself. And hopefully, hopefully catastrophe will befall everyone who's a regular on the podcast, and every couple of months I'll get the call like, hey man, we need somebody. Can you do it? Because I'll keep up with the product. And to be clear, I will still be doing Bonus Point and will still be doing NXT 8 years back on the VIP side of things. Pay to play is Tom Staupe now. And yeah, even starting Bonus Point was part of this. That was, you know, this was already sort of gestating, and I was like, all right, but I still want to cover the product in some kind of way, and that this just made sense to me. So I was going to do the Stand and Deliver post show. I was looking forward to it, and then we found out today that it was at 1 p.m., and that just doesn't make sense for my schedule on that day. For some reason, I had thought that it was 11 a.m. I don't know why I thought that. Maybe that's like the doors time for the event, and I saw that on the ticketing website or something. But yeah, 2 hours later in the day, unfortunately, starts to conflict with my paying job. So I won't be able to do that. And even if we tried to record it after the fact, the earliest I would be able to is like Wednesday night. So you know, but yeah. I don't know, a bummer in ways, but hopefully will lead to positive things, and just felt like I should share that here.
All right, folks. And with that, Tom's watch has ended. And until then, this is Kelly Wells, last founding member of PWT Talks NXT, saying until next week, please stop wearing that stupid cape. Cheers.